Yesterday, the coaching carousel, it didn't come to a conclusion, but we got a lot of answers. What is it, four or five jobs were officially taken by new permanent head coaches in the SEC? All of the buildup, which really was surrounding just Lane Kiffin's decision. You know, would he stay at Ole Miss? Would it be LSU? Would it be Florida? When that all settled, you saw all of the dominoes start to fall. So we're going to go through each hire that was made yesterday. I'll bring up Kentucky, even though they haven't had made a hire yet, but they do have now an open vacancy. So let's just go through all of it. I'm going to start at Ole Miss. I want to start there because Pete Golding, their defensive coordinator, being elevated to permanent head coach, not just interim, like he is now their head coach, I think it's really, really good. Golding has the track record to where he was going to be a head coach soon regardless. Maybe not next year, but in the next two or three, I was expecting Pete Golding to move up to a head coaching role somewhere else. And with where Ole Miss was in this hiring process, with how long it took Lane to make up his mind, they were kind of out of it for their outside hires, right? They wanted John Summerall, who went to Florida. Alex Golis was a name being thrown around. He went to Auburn. So they were kind of out of options that weren't already in the building to hire to replace Lane. So what they did instead, what Keith Carter did, which I think really is perfect, is they got a guy in their building who the players love to help push you through this playoff race and really beyond. And with Golding being the guy who it is, who's already been in the building, already has a relationship with these players, I'm much less worried about roster retention. Because if you brought in a new guy, it'd probably be a group of five guy. It would be a non-power coach. Then you really can worry about roster retention, right? How many of your elite players want to stick around when a Kirby Smart or a Steve Sarkisian, for example, is throwing them $1 million? I think having a familiar face in Pete Golding is incredibly important towards that roster retention. And to me, it feels like this really is the best that Ole Miss could do from where they were at because of their candidates already being occupied. And just having a proven guy in Golding who was at Bama under Saban, so he knows what a great program looks like, and really was a big part of why Ole Miss is so good. Obviously, a ton of that credit does go to Lane, but the chancellor of Ole Miss, maybe it was just, anti-Lane talk, but he gave a lot of credit to Ole Miss's staff as to why this team is as good as they are, and I do believe there's a lot of truth to that. Pete Golding, I think, is going to be very, very good. We know he's a good coach. This is his first head coaching experience. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But with how much experience he has just at the college level and with how much experience he has under great coaches, he knows what it takes to run a great program. I think Pete Golding is an awesome hire for Ole Miss. A lot of their fans are spinning this as they kind of won the drama. I think a part of it's true. They would have loved to hold on to Lane, obviously. And that the best outcome was that they do keep Lane Kiffin. But given that he's gone, this worked out really well for Ole Miss. I think it really did, having Pete Golding. Next, I'll go to Kentucky, because they're the one school left here who doesn't have a new head coach. They fired Mark Stoops this morning. It was really a weird time for a firing, because they would have gone after John Summerall, who coached there before. He loves Kentucky. Kentucky loves him, but they missed out on him because he went to Florida. So to me, I did think Mark Stoops was going to be fired in the preseason. I thought that this would be his last year, and that came true. But I don't really know why it happened today. I don't know why they waited until their candidates came off the board to make this decision, because then you're out of the running for them. So it was reported today by Pete Nakos that Will Stein and Brian Hartline, who are the offensive coordinators at Oregon and Ohio State respectively, they're kind of the names to watch. And I do like that a lot, because we've seen a bunch of these guys who are currently dominant head coaches, they started off as coordinators, and then they got their shot to be a head coach, and they were great. Brian Hartline is an incredible recruiter. I mean, the receivers that he's recruited to Ohio State are probably the best resume ever, honestly. And for Will Stein, he has an Oregon offense really, really good. Like, these two guys, their names have been thrown around all cycle for a good reason, because they have the potential to be really, really good head coaches, to bring a high-flying offense wherever they go. And Kentucky is a program that really does need a spark. They haven't been competitive really in the SEC in a while. They've been competitive in individual games. They've won some good games, but they haven't been a program that can really compete in the SEC. Could Will Stein or Brian Hartline do that? Nobody knows, but I think that they could. And at a place like Kentucky, if you go 7-5 or 8-4 every year, like, that's really good. That's kind of all they're hoping for. They're not hoping for an immediate playoff run. They're not hoping for a trip to Atlanta in 3 years. That's not where Kentucky's at as a program. So you bring in a coordinator like Stein, like Hartline, there's not a ton of pressure on them, at least not immediately at all. They'll be given time to get their guys in the building, both on the staff and on the roster, and just use what they've each learned from Stein under Lanning and Hartline under Ryan Day to build that program. Both those guys, I think, are very good options, and whichever one that Kentucky ends up with, if it is one of them, I think is a really good hire. So we'll see where that ends up taking them, this search for Kentucky. But either one of those coordinators, I think, would be really, really good. And for Mark Stoops, you know, it was a great career. He really made Kentucky roughly relevant. He had them winning good games. He ended their streak against Florida. He beat Ole Miss last year. Like, they had some good wins, and they had some good seasons. But it was just kind of time. The whole thing was kind of stale. You know, Kentucky was clearly not going anywhere. They were just kind of stuck in this middle ground of where they've been at. So I think moving on from Stoops was the right decision. The timing of it was a little strange to me, but I do think landing either Will Stein or Brian Hartline is absolutely a win for Kentucky. Now we got the four that were decided yesterday. We'll start kind of at the bottom. Ryan Silverfield is the new head coach at Arkansas. This is the only one that's really disappointing. Arkansas had to settle for Ryan Silverfield because earlier last week, like, it was reported that Alex Golish, like, had signed. Like, that they had agreed to terms and that it was just a matter of time before he was announced as their next head coach. But, you know, as things started to move up the food chain, as Lane went to LSU, Sarmall to Florida, Golish to Auburn, just all those coaches kind of moved up a rung, and then Arkansas was stuck with Silverfield. And Silverfield, funnily enough, he beat Arkansas this past season, which is just another layer to it. But you kind of have to have realistic hopes for the program when you're looking at this situation, and as an Arkansas fan. Right now, like, Arkansas wasn't expected to hire a coach that would immediately bring them to, okay, we can go win 5 games in the SEC next year. You know, we can win 8 games. We can be ranked. That was never really on the table for them just because that's not what the program is. The program is not in a spot right now where they can compete or are, like, you know, primed to compete immediately with the right head coach. But what Silverfield does bring is a good pedigree of building a program, right? He made Memphis into a good threat. They've been kind of, they haven't really made a playoff push late in the year, but they've been in those conversations of, you know, this could be the team from the American that makes it this year. This could be the group of five member of the playoff. So Silverfield knows how to make a program competitive. The question is, can he scale that performance up to the SEC? And for Arkansas, they're disappointed about the hire, obviously, but, you know, if you go 4-8 in Ryan Silverfield's first year as your coach, you doubled your win total from this season. You just kind of, you have to be realistic about where Arkansas is. If he wins 4 or 5 games next year, that is tangible improvement. Then in 2027, can he get to a bowl? Tangible improvement. All you have to look for out of Silverfield here is just proof of concept, tangible improvement. Just win some more games, look pretty good. He needs to retain KJ Jackson at quarterback. That's where the tests revolve around. If he can do that and he can get them 4 or 5 wins next year, it really is a good start to his tenure. So Silverfield, he's not this great hire, but I think he's fine enough, especially for Arkansas, to where they can start to develop and win some more games next season. And now I will go to Alex Golish at Auburn because he was Arkansas's guy until Auburn took him. I think this is really good. I think this is really good. My first note here is just boom. I think Golish is a really good hire for Auburn. They pulled him from Arkansas after they lost out in Sarmall to Florida, and he's an offensive guy with SEC experience. He has experience at Tennessee, and really, the Vols offense with Josh Heupel, it hasn't quite been the same. It's been good, but it hasn't quite been the same as it was when Golish was there as their offensive coordinator, and retention is so important. I'll talk about this mainly for Golish and with Sarmall at Florida, but for Alex Golish at Auburn, his top four players, in my opinion, that need to be retained are Deuce Knight, freshman quarterback, Cam Coleman, and then Malik Autry and Jay Crawford on the defensive side of the ball. It should be easier for him to retain the offensive guys because of what he brings, right? He brings a fast-paced offense. He brings a style that will get all these offensive players, you know, their time to shine. And he was just coaching Byron Brown at USF, a dual-threat quarterback who was really successful. Deuce Knight should look at that and be excited about what he can do in Golish's offense. And for Cam Coleman, you know, a lot of really good schools are going to throw him a lot of money. It is going to be hard to retain him. But does Coleman like Deuce Knight enough to want to play receiver with him at quarterback? Does he like Alex Golish enough to trust Golish to keep developing him and get him ready for the NFL probably after next season? We'll see. And defensively, I think the reason that Alex Golish was really hired so quickly is because he probably agreed with Auburn brass to retain DJ Durkin, at least in principle. And if he keeps Durkin as his defensive coordinator, that makes it way more likely to hold on to guys like Malik Autry, like Jay Crawford, and their other players, their young, really good players on that defense side of the ball. Golish, I think, really is a good hire at Auburn. I think he's really good. In terms of expectations, next year, got to win 7 or 8. probably seven, realistically, based on the roster retention that he's able to bring. I don't, next year should not be, you know, playoff talk or bust. Year two and three, you've got to win nine games. You've got to beat Alabama in your first two or three seasons if you're Alex Golish. You have to really show that progress of, we're going to get a win against Bama, or we're going to get a win against Georgia. We're going to be ranked in November. Like, we're going to just be, maybe not in these playoff conversations, but at least in a spot where we can beat anybody any given week. And to where we're really seeing progress after what we had with Brian Harsin, after what we had with Hugh Freeze. And Alex Golish, I do think, really fixes, at least in theory, a lot of the problems that have been facing Auburn recently. They haven't had an explosive offense. They've had problems at quarterback play. Golish was great with Byron Brown. I think he can do that with Deuce Knight. And Golish, even though he's not, you know, the mastermind of the defense, USF has been incredible in turnover margin and forcing turnovers in the past few years under Golish. Auburn's turnover margin has been horrible. So if Golish is able to come in and fix the inconsistencies on offense, and through, you know, what he's able to do with DJ Durkin on the defensive side of the ball, help fix that turnover margin, you're able to plug those holes in what Auburn's putting on the field. That can be the difference in like four games a season. So I think next year for Golish, you've got to win at least seven. And by 2028, maybe one win over Bama, one win over Georgia, just kind of prove that you can beat those programs. You'll really start to see a lot of trust in Golish and really see that he's doing it. Right, he's bringing Auburn back up to national relevance, to SEC contention, and he can get them into the playoff in the near future. Next up, second to last here, John Summerall going to Florida. Objectively, with no other context, this is a good hire. It is a good hire. Florida fans don't want to hear it, and they don't like it. Objectively, this is a good hire. The reason there is so much negativity and so much on the surface of like, this is a total failure, is because really going back to last year, Florida fans were effectively promised Lane Kiffin. Like, once they move on from Napier, they'll get Kiffin, who loves Spurrier, he likes the school, you'll get him there. And even just through this year's search, there was so much confidence within Florida, and really around the country, up until last Friday, that Kiffin was going to Florida. All the reports about them fading out, they weren't true. There was a lot going on, a lot of positive momentum towards Kiffin going to Florida before Strickland blinked, Florida's AD. And that's why they lost him. So because of how quickly they went from, we're going to get Kiffin, to we're going to take the guy from Tulane, that's why there's so much negativity. And there are similarities to Napier there, where they have similar record, you know, similar conference play, similar styles. And I understand, you know, another Group of Five coach from Louisiana, it's trauma for Florida fans. Summerall, I don't think, is Napier. He is a total psychopath. And what he's been able to do at Tulane, with how much roster turnover they have had, like, he had to use a lot of the portal recently. And he has them in their fourth straight conference championship. He has shown the ability at Tulane to consistently compete in and dominate the American Conference, which is the best conference. It's not a power conference. Like, being able to consistently compete and win that conference is very impressive. It is. And once again, retention is so important for Summerall and Florida. I got five guys who I think are the most important for him to keep at Florida. Number one is Dallas Wilson at receiver. Then you got Jaden Ball at running back. Then three defensive guys in Jaden Woods, Miles Graham, and Aaron Gates. Now, Miles Graham, legacy guy, who I don't think will be that hard to keep because he really does love Florida. And the other guy on offense who is up there, I'll talk about Lagway in a second, but Vernell Brown at receiver, the other five-star guy that Florida brought in at that position this cycle, he's also a legacy. I didn't include him on that list. I guess same reason I shouldn't have put Miles Graham on it, but just he's a legacy to the school. He has family on the staff. Maybe they'll be retained, I don't know. But he's a guy who I don't know if you have to worry about as much keeping because he does love the school. And I didn't put DJ Lagway on that list because the importance of keeping him is incredibly dependent on who Summerall brings in to develop him. Because Lagway has a lot of fixing that he has to do mechanically that has caused overthrows, impatience in the pocket, just developmental things that he needs to have fixed. If Summerall doesn't bring in somebody who can do that, the best course of action might be to go with somebody else at quarterback. But if he's able to bring in the right guy to develop Lagway, fix his confidence, fix his footwork, fix his mechanics, then he's that important on that list again. Because we know how good Lagway is talent-wise. We saw what he can do last year, and we've seen flashes of it this year. He just wasn't the same mechanically because of poor coaching. So if Summerall can bring in the right guy to develop Lagway and fix him, he's back up on this list. And the talent at Florida is so good, where if he's able to retain those players, 8 wins is probably achievable next year. But the expectation, I think, is 7 or 8. because Florida's schedule is still hard, it is much more workable next season than it has been these last two. Just 6 wins is not going to be very good. He won't get fired next year, obviously, but it'll be a lot of animosity within the fan base. You've got to win 7 or 8. You've got to beat a Tennessee, maybe go beat a Georgia. But you have a bunch of workable games to where Summerall can stack some wins, show some real progress, keep Florida ranked late in the year, and just sort of show that building up of the program that he's building. And Summerall has shown way more willingness than Napier has in the past to fix problems and to adjust. Because when something is not working, Summerall has shown that he is willing to change things, change his philosophy, and fix it. That didn't happen with Napier. So if Summerall is willing to make those adjustments really on the fly, or maybe just year by year, you'll see a lot more goodwill from Florida fans and from the administration to really keep him going. I think Summerall is a good hire at Florida. The reason it is seen as a negative is just because it was supposed to be Kiffin, and they fell out of the race so last minute, so late, and it just feels like a disappointment. Summerall, I think, is a good hire at Florida. And then finally, the big boy, Lane Kiffin going to LSU. By far the biggest hire of the cycle. Lane was the biggest name on the coaching carousel, and it feels like LSU really flexed their muscles as a program being able to close in on Kiffin. You had the whole Brian Kelly fiasco, where it was kind of a toxic environment. He was suing the school up until very recently, and you had all of this turnover and change in personnel in your administration, and you were still able to hire the biggest name on the market. That just shows that LSU is the type of program that they think they are. They're as good of a job as I think they are. This was an absolute flex of a hire. And with Lane, he should be able to retain tons of that roster that he wants, at least. And at LSU versus at Ole Miss, it'll be way easier for him to recruit out of high school and not just go into the portal and really have to fill your team with mercenaries, but he can recruit out of high school, develop a true baseline talent on that team, and then just use the portal to supplement the holes, which is the best way to use the portal. And for Lane at LSU, the expectations are going to be sky high. I mean, it's going to be playoff every year as the expectation. Really, it's because it's LSU, but now with Lane, that will be the hope. And probably a championship in the next 3 or 4 years. Like, that is going to be the expectation for Lane. And really, the biggest thing so far that's happened since Kiffin's been announced is that he's going to keep Blake Baker on staff, their defensive coordinator. He's a guy who I think is one of the best minds in the country already. I thought he was going to be a head coach as early as this year. And maybe that's still true in the next 2 or 3 years, but at least for next season, keeping Baker on staff is massive for the defense, because that will help Lane keep the defensive playmakers like a DJ Pickett or like some other young superstars on defense. Having Baker still as their defensive coordinator will make those players much more likely to stick around. And this does have the opportunity with Kiffin, what we've seen him, the theatrics in the past, and the LSU stuff, to blow up comically. This could make the Ole Miss thing look like, you know, just a minor argument at the dinner table. But I do doubt that happens. I think this is going to work, at least for the next 5 years, with Kiffin at LSU. He should make LSU immediately a national threat once again. They've always been a threat, but like a true playoff team, a true national title contender. It's going to happen fast. You know, this is not one of those hires where it's going to take a year or two to get things going. Lane is going to have LSU probably ranked top 10 in the preseason next year. Absolute home run hire for LSU, getting Kiffin. There's no ceiling on the potential with Lane at LSU, so we'll see how it goes. And that's it. Those are all the hires and the job opening at Kentucky that we have so far in the SEC. We'll obviously be covering all these developments as they keep going, what coaches they retain, what players they retain, all of the turnover that will come with these new coaching staffs. But thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. I have been Will Thomas, and I will see you next time.